Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Melachim Aleph, Perek Tes Zayin, the 16th chapter of Melachim Aleph. Where we last left our heroes was, we left Yerovam's family. Nadav, his son, has been overthrown by Baasha from Yisachar, and Baasha has consummately massacred the entire family of Yerovam. Nobody's left. And that was part of the curse that he received from Achia after not fulfilling his duty as a king. So what happens to Baasha? Turns out the Tanakh tells us that Baasha wasn't doing so well himself. Baasha brought as much corruption, spiritual corruption, to the land of Israel. And because of this, Hashem sent him a prophet whose name was Yehu ben Hanani. We'll come back to him later. Yehu gives a prophecy to Baasha to say that because you were equally, if not worse, as bad, if not worse, than your predecessor, Nadav and Yerovam. So Hashem is going to do the same thing like he did to them, and that is your family is going to die. There's not going to be any survivors, and anybody who's any corpse left in the field in the city will be eaten by the dogs, and any corpse in the field will be eaten by the birds, which is the same curse that Yerovam himself received. Terrible, terrible curse. So it turns out that Baasha himself passes away. It doesn't sound like he was murdered, but his son, in fact, it takes his place, and his son is a man by the name of Elah. Elah is the next person in line, of course, in the tribe of Yisachar. However, he's going to suffer, unfortunately. The next stage in Jewish history is full of civil war and rife with discontent and fighting. So 2 years into his rule, the head of his is what's called Tsar Machtis Harechev. So one of his generals takes opportunity when Elah is the king is drunk at a feast, and this fellow Zimri, who's one of his generals, goes and murders him during his feast and takes control. At the same time, Zimri, making very sure to make sure there's not going to be any problems with successors to Baasha, also consummately murders the entire family of Baasha, much like Baasha did to the family of Yerovam, which is the fulfillment of the curse, and Tanakh explicates that, of the curse of Yehu ben Hanani on this family. And if you want to read more about it, again, consult the book of Divrei Hayamim of the Malchei Yisrael, which we do not have extant today. However, Zimri's reign is not very long either. Tanakh tells us he reigned for a sum total of 7 days. Because in the meantime, while he had just claimed power and was busy eradicating the family of Baasha, which probably took some time itself, there was another rebellion against him. Because what happens is we have another contingent who revolt against him. And this is led by a person by the name of Omri, who fights against him. And in this fight, in this siege, what happens is that Tivni, there's actually a division between Tivni and Omri, who fight against this fellow Zimri, this general. Zimri burns himself to death in the palace. And Tanakh tells us actually that he dies because of the sins that he did to go in the ways of Yerovam. And there's now this split kingdom in the north between Tivni, who's the one controller, and Omri, who's the other. Tivni beginat and Omri. And ultimately, Tivni dies and Omri takes power. And we hear a few interesting things about Omri. Omri's going to play an important role. So after this disquiet, there's actually going to be a little more control from now onwards. He acquires a field called in Shomron, which is called, it's the name of the owner of the field, the hill was called Shemer. And he bought it and called it Shomron, which is the area called Shomron today. It was based on Omri's acquisition of this field from the non-Jewish neighbors. And unfortunately, he does pretty terrible things. He brings in idol worship, and he does pretty bad things, worse than Yerovam even, as it says. Nonetheless, he gets no prophecy of destruction. He passes away, and his son is a person who we're going to meet and know very well. His son is a man by the name of Achav. So Omri now takes on the kingship. He passes on. Achav comes into power. Achav does worse than even before him. He marries a woman who's not Jewish, whose name is Jezebel, who is actually from Tyre. She's the daughter of Et Baal, the king of Sidon, and he constructs a large mizbeach for Baal, for the Baal worship there in his area. And at the very end of the close of this parak, one last interesting episode is that during the times of Ahav, there was a fellow called Hiel who decided to rebuild Jericho against the curse of Yehoshua. And when he founded it, his firstborn Aviram dies. And when he finished it, when he put on the doors, his last son died as the curse of Yehoshua had said. And that's the parak. So it's just really, like, unfortunately, a very sad parak. But there are a lot of things we can learn from this parak, a lot of things to consider when thinking about this parak. So just a few things to pick up on. Number one is it does seem that there seems to be this transfer of the baton of power. It goes from one to the next person, but as long as the next person isn't doing better than the first person, then they're wiped out. We have to think about what it is about Omri and Ahav, even though they're doing bad things, which preserves them and doesn't allow them at least for two generations to meet their downfall. Something to think about. Just big picture as we go further. Now, the interesting thing is that in Zimri's case, Zimri only had 7 days, but the Tanakh tells him that the reason why he died it was because of his ways of going in the ways of Yerovam. And you think to yourself, like, well, what could he have possibly done in 7 days which implicated him in such a dire manner? I mean, like, what else could he possibly have done? So the Mefarshim really debate this. The Mefarshim is saying, Radak says, well, he was already previously a part of the cabinet, clearly, of Baasha before he murdered him. So, and we saw his actions, we saw his policies, we saw what his stand was on things. So he has a history. It wasn't as if, you know, a new man walks into town. We know what he was about. So he continued in that way, and that's why he was killed. The Malbim says something terrifying, which is, no, Hashem knew what he was going to do in the future, which is, wow. That means to say, Hashem saw the writing on the wall, even though he hadn't done it yet, which is, I think it's probably a combination of the two, of the Radak and the Malbim, is that his past has demonstrated what he's going to be doing, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu eradicated him before he got much further into that plan. One or two other things just to concentrate on. It is interesting that there was this strife between these two leaders, Tivni ben Ginas and Omri, and ultimately Omri prevails. There is actually a hidden story which is going on over here. It takes a little bit of careful reading in Divrei HaYamim to realize what's really going on here. Divrei HaYamim tells us an interesting story, and that is that Jehoshaphat, who's the son of Asa, who's currently the king of Yehuda, actually marries into the family of Ahav. How does this work? So the Seder Olam, which is the historic Medrash, which parallels Tanakh to give us the time frame, tells us an interesting thing, and that is that the parallel king of Yehuda, whose name was Asa, married his, let's see how exactly it says. Kevin Chiesi, Asa es benoi lebitoi shel Omri. He married his son, Jehoshaphat, to the daughter of Omri. That means to say Ahav's sister was married to Jehoshaphat. So the kingdom of the north and the kingdom of the south were united in marriage in this generation. Which means that although the Chazal are clear that Asa and Jehoshaphat were punished for this, they were coming too close to a dangerous kingdom. Nonetheless, there was an attempt at unity here. What in Asa's eyes prevailed that Omri should have been this hero? Meaning Omri did terrible things. What was it about him that had found favor in his eyes? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us already, and you can read it carefully in the Pesukim of this Perek, is that what Omri did which was special was that he expanded the boundaries of Israel. He started buying up territory, bought the mountain called Shemer, which he called Shomron. He started conquering territories. If you read the end of Melachim, later on, Melachim Beis, Perakov Beis, it talks about Ahav and all the cities that his father and he established. Even outside of the canon of Tanakh, there's a stele, which is a large slab of stone written by Mesha, the king of Moab, right about this time, and to quote it in translation into English. Now Omri took the land of Medva and occupied it in the days of his son, 40 years. And so this is a description from the neighbors of Israel about the expansionist ideas of Omri and his son Ahav. Apparently it was a great schus for Omri. Despite his terrible, spiritual, decrepit society, but the fact that he extended the boundaries of Israel, this is something worthwhile thinking about in contemporary times. There are people who say, well, you know what? The people who founded the state of Israel, not the kind of people we really, really respect necessarily religiously. How can we respect their actions? Well, it seems that Jehoshaphat and Asa did respect the actions of Omri, who expanded the boundaries of Israel very greatly. something worth thinking about in contemporary times. Last thing just to think about is, and that is what is the story about building the walls of Yericho got to do with this perek? Clearly there was a curse on anybody who built the walls of Yericho. It said explicitly in Yeshua perek vav, pasuk chavav, that anybody who builds Yericho will found it upon the death of their first son and will put the doors on with the death of the last son. That's exactly what happened to Chiel. So what's going on over here? So Radak points out that this is a discredit to Acha that he let her happen on his watch. But the moment takes it further, and he says, this is clearly a miracle, meaning to say, watching this happen is clearly watching the Yad Hashem, that this curse is coming out in full explicit expression in the days of Achav. Yet nonetheless, Achav was not listening. This is not just simply that it happened in his days, it is also the fact that he did not take the message of what was very clearly being told to him by this happening. And that's why this leads us to the next most incredible chapter in Tanakh, which is the arrival of somebody who's going to change the face of the Northern Kingdom. And his name is Eliyahu. Because now, says the Midrash, when Eliyahu saw that in fact Hashem was makpid on the words of Yehoshua, that Yehoshua's curse came into fruition, then Eliyahu says, what about the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yehoshua's teacher? Didn't Moshe Rabbeinu say that if you serve Avodah Zorah, then there won't be rain? Well, let's start next chapter, and Eliyahu is going to say, there's not going to be rain, because if Yeshua is listened to, then surely Moshe should be. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.